I'm very pleased to welcome to the show this week Nikki Clayton from Cambridge University. Nikki, you work on scrub jays, and I understand they're a kind of bird, but perhaps you could kick off by telling us, you know, what actually is a scrub jay and why do you want to work on it?
Well, I work on a number of birds. They're all members of the crow family, which includes the ravens and magpies and jays. And the ones I work on are jays, rooks and jackdaws.
But why do you want to study these birds? I mean, obviously it's important to study all kinds of species, but why are you particularly interested in this family of animals?
Well, these birds are particularly clever. We think of them as the feathered eight Einsteins, if you like, or the feathered apes of the bird world. They're the really clever ones. They have huge brains for their body size, and there are all kinds of examples of just how clever they are.
One of the things that you did recently was to see how good they were at planning for a rainy day. So tell us about that.
Well, these birds hide food for the future. And we call it caching behaviour, simply from the French, to hide. And what we were interested in was the extent to which they could actually plan, because obviously many animals, squirrels hide food for the future, all kinds of animals hibernate or migrate. So many animals have forward-looking behaviour, but there's a difference between just having a simple forward-looking behaviour that might be triggered by a seasonal cue or be entirely inborn, and actual planning, which requires some kind of thinking or forethought.
So how do you know they're actually doing that?
So what we did was we asked whether they could plan for tomorrow's breakfast. And this is an experiment that was actually done by two of my PhD students. It was led by Caroline Raby and with much help from Dean Alexis and a member of my department as well, Tony Dickinson. So credit must go to the three of them as well as to me. What we did was to ask whether they could plan for tomorrow's breakfast. So we taught them that there were a suite of rooms that they could visit during the day.
Like a bird motel or something?
That's right, a bird motel with a suite of three rooms. And in the evening, they went to bed as normal and go to sleep in the dark, just as all birds do. And when they woke up in the morning, they found themselves in one of two motel rooms. And on some days, they found themselves in motel room one. They woke up hungry and breakfast was served, no problem. But on other days, they found themselves in motel two. Unlucky, they woke up hungry as usual, but there was no breakfast.
I stayed in a few motels like that.
Absolutely. No names, though. And then all of a sudden, we gave them an unexpected test. Suddenly, in the evening, we gave them the opportunity to hide food as well as eat it. And lo and behold, all the birds put the vast majority of the food in the motel two where breakfast wasn't served.
So in other words, they knew that they'd been hungry there in the past, and so they were relying on this past experience, this past memory, to plan for tomorrow because they may be in motel two and have no food.
Exactly. So the trick of the question is that they hadn't been trained to hide food in either of these rooms. It was a totally novel, unexpected question. And they'd used their past experience about which rooms served breakfast in the morning and which didn't to solve a potential problem. They didn't know where they'd be in the morning, so just in case, put the food in the room where breakfast
was. Why do they have this trait? Because you can see why we might do that, because we're a bit more complex than they are, but what benefit does it serve this family of birds to have this ability?
Well, it's a very interesting question from a number of levels. My husband, Dr. Nathan Emery, and I have suggested that intelligence has evolved independently in two very different groups of animals, the apes, which obviously includes us, and members of the crow family. Why? Well, we've suggested that it's because actually in the wild they have similar problems to solve. They evolved at about the same time, about 5 million years ago, so about the same time as the apes. And they're highly social. And one of the major theories, theory formulated by Nicholas Humphrey, is that actually the reason why we and other apes are so intelligent is because we live complex social lives. Not just being in a big group, but basically having to keep track of who does what to you and when, and being able to sort of network and do politics. And the argument is that that's exactly the same kinds of problems that members of the crow family solve.
But they don't have people like John Prescott, though, hopefully.
Well, you know, I don't know what the Scribd equivalent of that is.
I got this press cutting. I was reading the Daily Telegraph this week and I saw this and I thought this is amazing because it's not only relevant to what we're going to talk about today, but it's also fascinating in itself. And I'll just read you this because it says, a quick smoke, it's good for the wings, is the headline. And it says, birds are picking up discarded cigarette butts and then using their smoke to fumigate the wings of parasites, experts said yesterday. Rooks have been spotted swooping onto the tracks at Exeter St David's railway station in Devon and then placing their wings over the smoke to collect the fumes. One commuter said, I noticed the rooks because they're not usually found in towns. They were generally flapping about when a chap flicked a cigarette butt onto the track. It was still alight and one of the rooks swooped down, picked the butt up with its beak and then flew around and landed on the platform dancing around with a cigarette butt in its beak. It looked quite comical, but then it dropped the butt onto the platform, placed its wings over it, collecting the smoke. It seemed as though it was using it to get rid of something, such as an ant or a parasite or something. And then they've got a quote from someone at the RSPB who said it's the first time they'd heard of the phenomenon, but that perhaps they'd learned to use the cigarette smoke to kill off parasites.
How very clever. I'd love to go and see them. I've not actually seen that. But, of course, rooks are renowned for doing a number of very innovative and seemingly clever things. One of the most famous examples is that a couple of years ago now, they won the award for BBC's Cleverest Animal. And what they were doing in this case, this was rooks on one of the M4 motorway service stations. And what the birds were doing was finding a very clever, innovative way of getting food that wasn't the bottom of the rubbish bins on the service stations, that two birds would sit in tandem on the end, opposite ends of the rubbish bin and slowly pull up the bin liner under their feet. Do it in tandem so that all the food goes to the middle bit where it's within beak's reach. And then what they would do is one bird would start tossing the food over the side while the other bird popped down onto the pavement to guard the food so it couldn't be stolen by others.
And because no one's obviously ever shown them how to do that, that's obviously them working that out de novo. They've had to work that out for themselves and then teach each other. So one's had to look at what the other one's doing to work out how to do it.
Well, I guess the million-dollar question is whether each individual bird works it out de novo and it just so happens that lots of them do it, rather like the blue tits that figured out how to open milk bottle tops to take the cream, or whether they're actually learning from one another. And that's a very interesting question because that's one of the kinds of experiments that we're actually starting to do now at Cambridge University, is actually look at whether the rooks will learn from one another and whether you could actually get sort of mini cultures depending on which individual bird is learning to do things in a particular way.
I think one of the most fascinating things that's come out of bird research recently is that they use tools. Because, you know, you can associate humans with using tools, maybe chimps, you know, smacking at something with a tool, but you don't expect, you know, birds have got a beak. Why do they need to use tools? Tell us a bit more about tool use in birds.
Well, I guess one thing is, you know, why do you need to use a tool if you've got a beak? Well, your beak can only go in so far. So just in the same way as you might have a problem with hands, that if there's a small hole, you can't get your hand in there, it may also be that the hole is sufficiently small or deep that the food is out of beak's reach, and that's when you would need a tool. And there are a number of species that do use tools, but I think the most remarkable thing is that some members of the crow family, one in particular, the New Caledonian crow, which, surprise, surprise, lives in New Caledonia, actually makes tools. So this sort of puts it on a par with the chimpanzees. They don't just use tools, they actually manufacture them. And they make different types of tools for different purposes.
And just to finish off, Nikki, is there any clue given to us, if you look at the animal's brain, why these birds have these spectacular abilities compared with other animals that don't perform like this?
Well, it's very interesting because if you look at the relative brain size, so that takes into account body size. After all, it stands to reason that bigger bodies have bigger everything, including bigger brains, and hence why the whales have such big brains. But if you look at it in relation to body size, then obviously we have the biggest relative brain. But if you look at the next ones down, it's the cetaceans, so the dolphins, but it's also the apes within the mammals, and in the birds it's two groups, it's the crows and it's the parrots. And if you look at where the enlargement is in the brain, just as in apes the enlargement is in the neocortex, well, the same is true of the crows. The enlargement is in the avian cortical area, in the avian neocortical area. So it seems to be even in the same part of the brain that is enlarged.
Thanks, Nikki. That's Nikki Clayton from Cambridge University, who works on scrub jays and is trying to use them as, to get insights into how they plan for the future and perhaps how our brains work too. If you'd like to ask any questions about animal behaviour, phone number's coming up shortly, and don't forget that in a second we'll be hearing from Tim Clutton-Brock, who works on meerkats. These are viewed as the world's most sociable mammals, more sociable even than Dr. Cat. And also Andrew Smith is waiting in the wings to tell us how monkeys manage to always pick the juiciest fruit.
The Naked Scientist Podcast, brought to you by thenakedscientist.com.